Hello, welcome to the Longshot Leaders Podcast. I'm Michael Stein. My guest today is Drew Blumenthal. Since starting his own agency in 2017, Drew has grown revenue to nearly seven figures, and how to offer services from paid ads to web development to organic social media growth. He's also got a great Longshot story. But this one is more about the skill set and how to get your business moving along with marketing and advertising. So that's where the value comes in today's episode. Hope you enjoy it. Here is Drew Blumenthal.
All right, I'm here with Drew Blumenthal. We're going to get into some skill sets. New Year still. It's January. We're going to get into how to promote and advertise and market. Also, I want to find out about that organic. We were talking on the pregame. I want to find out about how we can get organic traffic in this day and age off of our social. But because we want to know what, you know, how were you able to get your own agency and how did all that happen? So tell us a little about yourself. Where were you born? You said Princeton, New Jersey. What did mom and dad do for a living?
Yeah. So my parents both actually worked on Wall Street. So they were finance people. My dad still actually works for FINRA. And it's very interesting because I have that analytical ability. Like, it's just in my family, but I was always the creative one too. So like, what always drove me to marketing was I like that you have to be analytical. Like, to be good at it, you have to look at the numbers and analyze it like an accountant or finance person. But at the same time, you need that creative ability to make your assets, to really be able to think outside the box, because it's not always one, two, three, you do this, and then this happens. So it's like you have to have that creative mindset, whether you're designing the ads or not, just to be able to be successful in the field. So that's so cool about marketing, that you have to have that creative side and that left and right brain.
Right. Just to get the feel of like how you came up and school and all that, you got any brothers and sisters?
I have one brother. He's actually in science. So he's getting his master's degree in some type of chemical engineering, which again shows he's more of that side of the family when I was more creative.
Now, you're the older one.
I'm the older one by six years.
And you're the responsible one, yes?
We're both responsible. I mean, he's getting a master's degree. I mean, I think our parents lucked out pretty well. I mean, always was somebody who also didn't follow in the lines. Like, it's interesting because I got good grades in school, but I was always the kid who, I wouldn't say I got in trouble, but I was the kid that people knew about and the teachers like, oh God, I'm getting him. I really don't want to have him because he could speak his mind and he isn't afraid to do what he thinks is right. And it's super interesting. Like, one thing that actually happened to me when I was in seventh grade, my parents were called into school and they got a call one day and they're like, we need you both to come into school. And they kept saying, what did you do? What did you do? What did you do? And I'm like, I don't know. I swear I didn't do anything. And they're like, you're getting straight A's. Like, you're doing your homework. Like, what could they possibly be calling you us in for? And then they just said, we think your child is weird. We just think he's very strange. And they're like, does he have friends? Yes, people seem to like him. So what's the problem? He's just weird. And that was just like a really good way to describe me. And then literally 2 or 3 months later, I became student council president and beat five people. So it's just definitely, that was always me. Like, obviously, I didn't just start my own business when I graduated college. But it just made a lot of sense for me to just do my own thing, because that's just the kind of person that I am. It's just like, I'm not afraid to do what I think is right and just follow my own path. Where when I worked for the agency world, you have to be able to follow commands well. Like, you have to be able to, if somebody tells you do this, you just do it. And it's kind of like in most industries, when you're an employee, that's just what you need to do. And that just was never me.
That's an interesting, I know my class president, Evan Ocean, his parents were, I think lawyers, and he became a lawyer and he was very precocious. He was a little weird, you know, in a good way. And I remember he was, you know, everyone's like, you're going to run for class president. And he won it. He was just, you know, just energetic and left field. Were you, I mean, did they ever just say, you know, just, you know, Drew's out of left field, or what was it? Just nothing in particular?
Yes, that was definitely a good way to describe it, is that I was just always a little bit different. And it's not like I broke any laws or anything. It was more of just, I was just a different way of thinking. Or I remember in college, everyone would always comment because I would wear like colored pants to class. Like I had rainbow colored pants, and I'd sometimes just feel like wearing them. And like, it was just, I wasn't afraid to just be myself or do what I felt was what I wanted to do. And it's not a bad thing. Like if everybody was like that, the world wouldn't function. But that's where a lot of CEOs come from, or a lot of people come from when they don't fit the mold, how they get into their own thing. Because when you're your own CEO, and I'm sure you know too, nobody's really sitting there telling you what to do. Like when you have a team, they're relying on you to make the decisions. And if you can't think for yourself and you can't figure out, all right, here's a problem, here's how I'm going to solve it. And it's not always like you are like, oh, here's a problem, I have the solution in 2 seconds, but you need to be able to critically think, and you need to really be able to think for yourself in order to really run your own company.
What'd you major in college?
Marketing. Literally majored in marketing.
Did you know that you wanted to do that from the get?
Yeah. I went in as a marketing student and I went out as a marketing student.
Why? What told you in high school, like, you know, said, I want to be in marketing? Why?
I mean, again, I really like the creative aspect. I really like the balance between creative and analytical. I mean, I took a few like basic marketing classes and I liked it. Another thing that also really just fascinated me about marketing is I always was very into brands. Like obviously today, just because I knew I was going to be on the podcast, I'm in like not a really heavy branded shirt, but I am the person who literally walks around New York City in like a sweater with F's all over it, or the G's for Gucci, or I have Burberry plaid, like everything. So I've always been fascinated by brands and like watching brand stories and the development between the association of like, if you look at Tiffany Blue, you don't even need to know that it's Tiffany's. It's just in someone's mind, and you know so much about that person and that brand just by the color. So I found that always super fascinating and interesting. And like, even my mother was like, you should go into marketing. And it's like, it just made so much sense to me.
Okay. So you get out of college. Do you start your marketing company right away?
No. So how it happened was, I knew I wanted to move to New York City. Like that was super clear to me. And like, I knew where I wanted to live to, but I wanted to work for these large ad agencies in New York. And when I went to Westchester, basically it was like in the middle of Pennsylvania. And they're like, oh, we don't have any connections to New York City or these large ad agencies. So what I ended up doing was I went to LinkedIn and literally connected with every single person who worked for these ad agencies to like help me get an interview. Because if you don't know anyone, especially in New York, like they're not even going to get to your resume because they get hundreds of resumes a day. So what ended up happening, like I would get up at like 5 o'clock in the morning every day before school, like my junior and senior year, and just network and connect with everyone I could on LinkedIn. And like, that's how I built like 30,000 like followers on LinkedIn in college, because I was just connecting with everybody I possibly could that worked for these companies. And it really did work. Like I interviewed at almost all of them because it was so cool. And that also really pushed me even further into the digital field. Cause I'm like, you could network, you could meet with like anyone. Like the world is so accessible now because of digital. And it's like the digital world gets such a bad rap sometimes from, oh, it's like, it makes you feel bad. It makes people feel like insecure and jealous and all of that. And to me, I had such an opposite experience. Like to me, it allowed me to get into the world that I want, to build the life that I wanted. Like, yes, I still see sometimes some of that stuff. And I also used it for education. Like I learned so much about the digital space from it. Like, it's just, to me, it's such a powerful tool And it really is a tool, because the definition of a tool is like the way that you wield something. So with any tool, there's so much power in the tool, but it's how it's utilized by the person who's using it.
Okay, really cool. Heard that about LinkedIn. That's awesome. Want to talk to you about LinkedIn, but now I'm going to want to go back for a second. Just real quickly, what was the dinner table like with you, your brother, your mom, and your dad? I want to know what those conversations were like. You seem like both of you guys were probably intelligent kids. I want to know what I want to know about that. I have a reason.
It was very interesting. Like, it was very clear that my parents never got me. They still don't get me. Like, they're also, it's so interesting, they're not brand people at all. My brother isn't, my mom isn't, my dad isn't. And like,
what'd you guys talk about at the dinner table?
I mean, a lot of it was school. A lot of it was, they would try and stay away from certain subjects that made them uncomfortable. Like it was just a little like off, just things that I was interested in. And like, it was just awkward. Like, we all did eat dinner together most of the time, and it wasn't hostile. It was just, you could tell that there was tension. I was always a little bit uncomfortable. And also, it was super interesting too, because I also didn't like most of the food that my parents cooked, because don't know if it's because they are such financial people, but it was just very bland. Like, it was like, they don't cook with spices. And it was even like, when I went home because of COVID and I left New York City, one of the least favorite things I had at home was my dad was cooking for me, because he just cooked and I didn't like the food. So I actually lost weight when I went home, because I just didn't want to eat too much of the food.
Okay. That's why, you know, I picture you guys having, you know, intellectual debates, you know, or something of that nature. I used to have debates with my mom, you know, Jewish kids are, you know, supposed to do that. I don't know why, you know, but, you know, I mean, I was just wondering, because is that where you cut your teeth on, you know, being, you're pretty savvy, you know, that's why I'm, you know, it's like, where did this crew, you know, where did this grow from, you know? And I would think that it'd be something like, that your parents and your upbringing, and, you know, it just doesn't happen, you know, out of nowhere. Right.
I mean, they were both very smart. They were actually both New Yorkers. So they were both from Brooklyn, and then they moved to the country, and then I end up moving back to the city. So clearly I took the opposite path, but I'm like, I knew that I wanted to go to New York City, because I'm like, I love the fashion. Like, even as a kid, because keep in mind, I was fairly young when Sex and the City was on, I would sneak and watch it. And I knew I wasn't supposed to or allowed to. So I would.
Why not?
Well, it's interesting, because they tried to shelter me and try and be like, I wasn't even allowed to watch a PG-13 movie until I was 13. And like, because they were so, maybe that's where it comes from too, is like, I would rebel because I was in such a strict household that I would like go the opposite direction. It's like, I hated all the rules. And it was like, they would literally say, well, you have to be 13 to see a PG-13 movie, or you have to be this age to like even watch anything that's sexual. And like, it was just very, very by the book and very strict in terms of like, this is how things are and this is how you do things. And it would always make me more curious. Like, I'd always want to be like, man, I want to watch this or do this or try this. Or I even remember as a kid, one time the doctor asked me, do you eat sushi? And my mom even answered, and she's like, oh, they wouldn't like that, so they don't eat that. And like, now I love sushi, but I didn't even try it until college, because it was like almost written off the table for me. I don't think intentionally, but it was just kind of like very by the book.
Got it. Okay. So now I just want to kind of get that, because, you know, that's just part of who you are. So really interesting. You go to LinkedIn, you know, you do that, you know, LinkedIn to me is like hard to get traction, but, you know, but it's doable by doing what you did, right? By personally reaching out, you know, and just building up like a following through there. You built relationships strictly electronically with these people, or you had physical interviews, or what was that your first bit of, you know, success, you know, social wise, was on LinkedIn?
Yeah, no, it definitely was that. And obviously it was trying to get my resume through. So it was actually a lot easier back then. So LinkedIn is now owned by Microsoft and they make rules about, oh, you can only send this many messages per day. And obviously it became more about a profit over like what it used to be. So it's not as easy to growth hack the way that I did. But honestly, what I was just doing was I would write a message and say, hey, I'm a senior here, like tell a little bit of a story and then like attach my resume and say, could you please get this to an HR person? And again, the right person would sympathize. So the person who ended up getting my interview into the job that I did end up getting, she was a very nice young woman and a very social person. So it just, you happen to hit the right person who is a nice, caring person. Like there'll be certain people that just won't answer your messages and just ignore you. And just, that's kind of how it goes too, is like a lot of it is a numbers game. So if you expect to send 5 messages and get 5 replies, you're going to be disappointed. So it's all about doing it consistently and just, again, studying what's working and what isn't, which is the analytics. So it's like, if you start sending a message and then it doesn't work, maybe you try a different messaging and then you see like, all right, the data showing me if I say it like this, then it'll work. And then you start tailoring your message. And again, you don't want it to sound spammy or body as well. Like if you're just copying and pasting the same message over and over again, it's not going to work either, because unfortunately there are a lot of people that do use like automation and AI, which is a huge topic now and all of that. And it just, it doesn't come off as genuine. And like, that's usually when it doesn't work. So yes, you need an efficient way to do it, but at the same time, you want it to still come off as like a genuine person and a genuine conversation.
Okay. So you launch your marketing company. How does that grow? It grows, look like you had some good success. What were some of the big factors for that?
Yeah. So obviously it was a slow start. I mean, I started off with like 1 or 2 clients that were referrals. I had like a very basic Wix website to start with. A lot of it came from just, again, one is just continuing to do it, continuing to network. One place that actually really helped me to grow very quickly was Upwork. So Upwork is a very big platform for freelancers and agencies and all of that. And I got on it because I'm like, well, Upwork is so huge. They're a big company. And I was really, really struggling with it. Like I kept sending proposals out and it was months before I got anything. And I was really getting upset. And then what ended up happening was this young girl who was actually, I was about 25 and she was about 20. And she said, oh, you look really nice. I liked your photo. I liked the video that you had. And she found me on page 6 or 7. And it's like, well, that's probably why I'm not getting any business, because I'm sitting on page 6 or 7. And who the hell goes to the end of the list? So one thing that I started to realize was reviews really matter, and the algorithm really favors people with a lot of reviews. And then over time, as I got bigger, I realized how many of the reviews aren't even real. So I actually do have a partner now that I do use for clients sometimes when I feel like they really need it, is you can buy reviews and like really cheap too. So like some of these large agencies that are showing 200 reviews on a platform, I'm not saying all of them are fake, but there's so many times where the reviews aren't all real. And it's like, is that ethical? And I question it. I mean, it's certainly not illegal, but it's like, if you really have a skill, and I do it a lot for e-commerce too, when someone's trying to sell a product online and they don't have any reviews because they're a new brand, I really do buy the first couple when I see that it's not working in terms of results. And it makes a difference. Like, we really care what other people think, and we really care about group thought. And that's where learning how to manipulate the internet is really important, because a lot of the time you could spend so much time and money on it and like get nowhere. So it's kind of, sometimes you get lucky, But a lot of it is knowing, like, what are people really looking for? Like, if you're a cold person on the internet, they're looking for those reviews. They're looking for the ways to really trust somebody because they're not meeting you in person. They're not trusting someone else's opinion. So you need to build that trust factor on your own without that other person.
Okay. Product launch.
Yes.
Everybody depends so much on social now, and not just paid ads, because anybody can, you know, the way to put together a paid ad, fine. But what's the algorithm that you found? You know, you obviously try to help your clients go viral. Seems like TikTok seems to be like a big vehicle now.
If the Senate doesn't ban it, because there's now a bill that went through Senate.
I can't see that happening. There's too many businesses.
Yeah, something is very shady about TikTok, though. I mean, I still do it myself, but universities are banning it. A lot of foreign countries, like my VAs in India, can't even use it because it's banned in India. There's something about it. I don't know what it is. I don't want to slander them because they are a great company and they really know what they're doing in terms of building a brand, but there is something privacy that certain people know that I don't know, or the common person doesn't know, that they must be doing something with the data, or something about it is not adding up. Because why is Facebook, why is Instagram, why is Twitter never been sent with these kind of bills or banned the way that TikTok is, or at least being speculated?
Because they're not American company?
I don't think it's that.
Okay.
I really think that there's something about it that, again, I don't want to speculate, but there must be something with the data or something that people high enough up must know about. Because for you to put something, I mean, because think of it this way, it would be in America's best interest if it was completely legitimate to have it, because US people are selling products and services on it. So it's bringing the government revenue. So for them to really want to ban it definitely feels like it's something where the potential revenue is not worth the risk. And they know something. I'm sure the FBI knows. I'm sure there's something about it that's...
I love TikTok, but that's an interesting thing. I'll tell you what, that is one heck of an addictive app. I mean, that is like, out of all the the social platforms, TikTok just sticks. It's so sticky, man. I stick to that thing. I'm like, I got to get off this thing. So much so, they even play that video. That's the one thing the other platforms don't do. It's like, you've been on it a long time. You might want to go take a rest. Why don't you get off right now and come back later? It's like, really? Now TikTok's telling me I should stop using their platform because I'm using it so much.
I mean, because it's video. You connect with video. I mean, that's why we're doing the podcast over video. It's just, if you're trying to get to know somebody, you get to see their voice, you get to hear their expressions, you get to see their eye contact. Like, you can learn so much in video, and that's why it's so powerful. Like, audio is great, text is great, but to really build an authentic connection, I mean, nothing really beats video. So that's where it is great to have that video. And it's like, brands that are really doing well know that. And again, if you want to be able to scale on the internet, video needs to be part of like what you're doing.
Well, perfect segue. So product launch, want to scale the best we can. What are some, we're not going to take us through some bullet points on what were some key movers on helping some of course, you need a great product. That's what I got saying. But as far as the algorithm of where, when, who, what, where, why, how with your video marketing, because it seems like that's the 80-20 rule. It's like 80% of your marketing is going to be through video these days. You know, what are some of the things that really push that product launch and scale along?
Yeah. So number one is looking at the website and making sure the website is legitimate. Like, you need to have very good photography and images on your website. So like, for example, if you're in skincare, you really want to make sure you don't just have like products of the, or shots of the product itself, but like, what does the consistency look like? What does the actual product look like? Like, those are things that people are looking for. And then number two, as I mentioned before, is reviews. So whether they're real reviews or you buy a couple, I mean, what I would do if I was to start an e-commerce brand tomorrow, Drew decides to go into apparel or beauty or food or whatever, I would build the website. And honestly, I would go for influencers first and sending the product out to people first, and then trying to get them to produce content on it, to leave reviews on the website, to really start selling to their friends and family. Like, before I start doing paid ads, I would really start with just focusing on getting the product out there for either free or signing up for a program or getting influencers and doing that kind of stuff first, to A, to really test the product, and B, to really build that trust first. And then when I feel like I have some good reviews on the website, I have some traction, I can see people going to the website and actually buying, that's when I take it to the next level and say, like, all right, I'm making $5,000 a month, or I'm making $2,000 a month. So I'm ready to start advertising this. And I would honestly start on like Facebook and Instagram first, just because Facebook and Instagram is where you're falling into somebody's feed, and people are more likely to buy something if they have never heard of it or have the need. Because Google is really great, but a lot of times what people do on Google shopping is they're comparing the product right next to it. So they have the need, but it's like they're comparing, like, oh, I want to buy this product, and product A has 500 reviews and product B has no reviews, so I'm going to go with product A with 500. Or they're comparing how good the website is, or even if they've heard of the brand or not. So a lot of that really curates Google, where the intent is higher, but a lot of times it's harder to sell to a cold person that never has heard of your brand. So I would honestly start with Facebook and Instagram once I had some initial sales going. And then once I see Facebook and Instagram doing really well, then I'd add Google Shopping and Google Search and all of that on. And then it's all based on the algorithm. So basically in ads, you optimize for purchases, or you optimize for the conversion you want. And then as you get the conversions you want, you scale your budget up. So everything is AI driven in ads. So you optimize for the goal that you want. And that goes for lead generation too. So say like with my ads, I'm optimizing for people to fill out a form. The more people that fill out a form, the AI learns, oh, if I target this person and this person and this person, they'll convert. And then every conversion is like a data point. So it goes back to like data analytics, where the more data points you can get consistently, the easier it is to scale. So that also goes back to where a website is really important, because if you can make your website amazing and make your website trustworthy, then the AI really can trust you, and then you can get conversions easier, and then you can scale up. So that's how companies either do really well or really poor, because if the algorithm's actually working in your favor, you have an automated system that's going to get you automated purchases and automated leads. And if you don't do it properly, then you end up like wasting a bunch of money. The AI doesn't get any conversions, and then you're just spinning your wheels.
That's really good. So, let's talk website. Great pictures, formatted, looks clean, looks nice. What are some little nuances? I mean, the reviews, all that. Yes. What are some little nuances, little out of the box things, certain websites that you've really seen that are really nifty, that have really kind of pushed that website to uniqueness and better conversions and more attraction towards the product?
Yeah. I mean, definitely the reviews and the images, making sure that it's easy for people to contact you or buy. So like, again, if you have a contact page, you have an easy form for somebody to fill out. Are your phone number buttons on your website clickable? So there's so many times where I see a website and the phone number isn't clickable. And to me, it's obvious, but to most people, it wouldn't be if you don't think about it. Because if the phone number isn't clickable, you have to go and manually type in the phone number and manually dial it. Like, people aren't going to want to do that. So it's like, if you make the phone number and emails clickable and people can automatically click and send an email or click and call, your conversions are going to skyrocket just from even doing that. So it's things like that that I'm looking for when I'm going through a website, or how many times I see stock photos on a website. So it's like, oh, I bought this photo off of Unsplash or something. And it just, everybody's using the same photos and they're so well cropped. It's so obvious that they aren't real. Like, people now with social media would rather see imperfection and things that are genuine and authentic. And it used to be years ago where the trend was have everything be perfect, have everything look a certain way. And it's like, now things are changing where people are tired of that and they want to see realness. So it's like, anything you're doing, so whether you're a contractor, whether you're a lawyer, whether you're selling a product, like, people want to see real authentic photos and real authentic videos that aren't just something you could buy off the internet. And it's like, in a certain case, maybe you could buy it and then go into Canva and like do some text overlay and make it your own. But if you're just going to throw up a stock photo, or people do that on social media all the time on their account, and it's like, it really doesn't build a good following. Because I mean, there's so many times where I see like the neon sign of like, you will achieve greatness or something like that. And it's like, it's not even yours. And I've seen that photo 50,000 times. So it's like, yes, it's more work to create your own authentic content, but it's like, it's really important to be able to do that. And say you're not a graphic designer, you could easily go on Upwork or Fiverr or somebody who's an expert at graphic design and build your own creative for you. Like, it still could be your brand, but it's just at this point, you really need to be building your own assets.
Great stuff. Video dynamics. So you've done everything, even whether it's the beginning or you're just at the point where you just finished your, you know, Performance Max, smart shopping campaign, you know, and it's converting well at a 10 ROAS, you know, how are you going to instruct your clients with the way to make their video? Now, this could change depending on the type of product and the industry, but what are some commonalities that you've seen with dynamics and how a video, what messages are said, the pacing, you know, the messaging?
Yeah.
What are some things that really, you know, move that?
So shorter is better, genuinely. Like, people don't want to spend 2-3 minutes watching a video. So definitely shorten it. I mean, Instagram doesn't even let an ad show if it's over 60 seconds. I mean, I usually encourage people to go for 5 to 15 seconds, or if it is a little bit more like instructive, like even 30 seconds is good. But it's so interesting that people think longer is better, and that's usually not the case. So it's like, for me, I actually spend a little bit of time doing this exercise where, because I do not have Hulu Premium, so I actually get the Hulu ads, where I spent a week or two when I was watching it, counting how many seconds every commercial was, and 90% of them were 30 seconds or less. Meaning that, like, if you could do a Fortune 500 company could sell their product in less than 30 seconds, like, everybody should be too. So that's number one, is like, the more short and concise you can make your videos, the better. Number two is having subtitles. So if you're talking, you want to include subtitles in your videos, because over 50% of people watch videos without sound or don't have their sound on. So if you're talking during a video, people won't be able to get what you're saying. So those subtitles are really important. So I think that those are really two big tips. And again, in a video, it's more about what value you can provide in the short amount of time. So it's like, why should somebody care? What are you selling? What is the context? And trying to get that message across as quickly as possible. And there's like lots of different trends now. Like, there's ASMR now that's really popular.
What's that?
So ASMR is sound-based videos. So there's been studies that have been shown that sound really resonates with people. So like, the crinkling of something, or like there's different sensation sounds that if you include them, they really attract a lot of attention.
That's really cool. Yeah. Do you know of any, cause I know like with colors on websites, blue is trust, red is passion, you know, gets a feeling of, you know, passion. A lot of restaurants use red, you know. Do you have any particular sounds that, have you dug into that and yet and kind of see what kind of particular sounds pull an emotional, as opposed to a makeup company, as opposed to like, you know, an outdoor adventure company or something like that?
Yeah. I mean, I've done some different ones. One that was super interesting for a company was the sound of a sewing machine. So like stitching, and it really got people's attention. And it's like, I think it's just the different sound combinations that just really attract attention. And it's like, think of it this way. If you're running a Facebook or Instagram ad and all of a sudden this really sensational sound hits your eardrum, you're going to stop that thumb and pay attention. So it's kind of an interesting way to attract attention, because that's also a lot of what social media is and digital is you're fighting for attention. Like, people don't have a lot of attention span now, and we're hit with so many messages a day that it's like you're trying to fight through that noise to really attract attention to your brand when 50,000 other brands are yelling at people.
ASMR?
I think. Let me just Google it real
quick. That was an aha nugget right there, because that's something that wasn't on my radar. And I'm like, you know what? That makes perfect sense.
Yep. It's ASMR. It stands for Anonymous Sensory Meridian Response.
Nice. That's great. And you know what? I'm thinking when I'm on TikTok or YouTube Shorts or whatever, and you're scrolling, and you know, if you heard that, like, let's say that train spotting train, that the train that they use in train spotting, you know, it's like almost like, wait, I'm going to stop for a second. Where's this going?
Yeah.
Heard that.
Sound is so powerful. And that, again, that refers back to why is video so powerful? Because you get that sound, you get the audio, like you get everything. And it really engages the senses in such a powerful way.
Right. That's fascinating. Any other little nuggets you want to share? That was a good one.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely interesting. Like, you just need to test a lot of things too. So it's like, you might think that something is going to do really well. So here's like another example. So I've been working with like this lipstick brand for several years, and they did okay. Like, they've been struggling, and like they went through many partners, and basically what ended up happening, I think it's probably at this point like a year now, is they've tried so many videos, they've tried carousel, static images, and like nothing consistently ever worked. We did this video that was, I think it's like literally 5 seconds of just somebody zoomed in on their lips, just applying the lipstick on their lips, and it just says featured in Vogue. And it's like super, super stupidly simple. And they've gotten probably like to the point where they've sold out like several times over on this one ad. And we've tried other things, even the same video in a different color, and nothing produces sales like this. Like, sales per day, like sales over and over and over again in like hundreds of them. And it's just like, when you find that creative and it just really sparks people's interest, it's just, sometimes that's what it just takes. And you just need to keep testing things.
It's interesting. Did you the same video and said feature in Vogue in other videos, but it wasn't working as well as this particular one?
So it was the same video, but in different lipstick colors. So it's like, this one is like a pinkish color, and we've tried it in red, we've tried it in white, like the same video. And just something about this one video in this one style, in this one color.
What was the color?
It's this pink color.
Pink. It's not like, it's not a deep red. It's like a pink.
The deep red is not even working like the way that this pink is.
So it's got to be, is it a unique, different kind of pink that no one's ever seen before?
I mean, it's a striking pink. Like, it's a deeper, like darker pink, but it's not.
Also, it could be people that, you know, people are familiar with the first video, and that's the one that hit first.
Oh, it's cold people that are buying it. Like, and they're just buying this. I mean, I think other people are buying other, but most of them literally click on this ad. They go to the website and they buy this one color, and it's just, it's super fascinating. And like, I have the ad set up where I test other creative and just nothing has beaten this in like a year.
Wow. So it's either the color or the exact pacing. You've duplicated the exact pacing of the video and the other ones. It's gotta be the color, right?
Yeah, but we've run ads with the other with this color before. It's something about the color combination with the, but I think the takeaway for your listeners or for people listening to this is really, you got to test things. And if something's not working, you just got to keep trying until you really find something that really pops. And it's just, sometimes it's super clear that it's going to pop. And other times it's just like, I never would have thought, I never would have guessed.
Right. That's fascinating to me. And what is the psychology behind that reaction? That's what really, you know, fascinates me quite a bit. So where are you at right now with your company? Let's go dial back to you. Want to know where you guys are at in your
adventure. So we're a growing team. I have about 15 freelancers, I think, at this point that help me with different things. Like, I'm still the head honcho, the head CEO, really involved with almost everything. And I still keep very close communication with all of my clients just because I'm young. I really feel like that's what's missing a lot sometimes in the industry too, is that I talk to a lot of people who they talk to a salesperson in marketing. They get really hyped up. They really know what they're talking about. And then they pass them on to somebody who really doesn't have the experience, who might be just over busy. And it's just like, then they're sold an experience that they don't get. And I feel like that's really frustrating and disappointing in the field. And it's kind of like, obviously I can't do everything, which is why I hire people to help me. But I still want to be that overall figure that is that person who's deeply rooted, who's deeply still involved in the field and learning and doing it. And like I said, that's really where I'm at. And as I said, I love helping these people because, I mean, the marketing director on my team is in Canada. I do have a copywriter who's in America, but a lot of them are people in India and Pakistan and like third world countries who are very, very smart, but they're just not people that have the same opportunities that I do, but they do great work and they're very dedicated and very loyal and very respectable. So where I would like to continue to grow is even beyond 15 people, I'd love to get to 30 people or to 40 people or to 50 people. Other things that I'm really working on now is like, which also fascinates me too, that I'm even like care about this so much, is getting verified on Instagram. And it's like the fact that this blue check mark matters so much. Like, we see it all the time on social posts. And we're like, I even hear it all the time when someone's like, oh, have you heard of so-and-so? And I'm like, one of the first questions they ask is like, are you verified? Or if I want to get featured on bigger platforms, like I'd love to one day.
What are the algorithms, the bullet points to get verified these days?
I mean, I'm working with a company to help me, so I don't know everything about it, but obviously you have to have a certain number of followers. You have to have a certain number of press. So like, you have to be featured in a certain number of articles. There's also like a Google knowledge panel that you have to have where, you know, when you Google someone and you see like all the information about them on the side, like that's a Google knowledge panel. Like, and then you also have to go to a rep and like, they have to approve you. So it's like, I'm sure there's some back end deals or back end things that go on there. But it's like, for example, if I ever, which is one of my goals one day to get on like Good Morning America or the Today Show and really have a more global audience or a huge millions of people watching me, this stuff matters. Like, it really does matter how many followers you have and if you're verified or not. Like, that.
The likes on how much likes your products have, social, verification.
Yeah. And if you even look at TV commercials too, a lot of them say like, oh, we have over 20,000 reviews or we have over 50,000 reviews. And maybe some of them are fake. Like, you don't know, but we just, rely on that number and say like, oh, they're credible because 50,000 people like them, or oh, they're credible because they've been featured in Forbes or they've been on Good Morning. Like, it's so
hard to do on Amazon, right?
Right.
That's a little different. You can't really do that on Amazon.
On Amazon, they care about the number of reviews, though. Like,
yeah, everybody cares, but you can't get fake reviews on Amazon. Not on a grand scale. Probably like you can say, hey, buddy, can you buy this? And we get a team of the people buying stuff. But
I mean, there's companies that are out there that can do it, though.
Really? And Amazon doesn't. That's a little risky, though. You don't want to mess with those dudes, right? You get kicked off.
I mean, yeah. I mean, there's always risk in all of these platforms. You're not supposed to do it, but it's hard because if you really want to grow, sometimes I'm not saying like to do all everything be fake, but in a certain point, there's a gray line to it in terms of, especially if you're struggling. Like, I'm at a place where I don't need to do that anymore, but there's plenty of companies that are so small or just starting out where I want them to make it and I want to help them in the best way that I can. And for those small businesses out there that are struggling, like, who knows on Upwork, I literally spent 6 months like every day trying to apply for jobs and getting nothing. What if I would have gotten a fake review or two or three and then been able to rank higher and then been able to accelerate that growth? Like, everything is real for me there. And it's just where at a certain point do you realize, and here's another actual interesting point too. So I was on a call with another business and they're in the catering space. And like, we were looking at their competitor site and he told me, oh, all of these images or all these images on this page are not even real. They're stock photos. And this huge, huge catering company was using fake images to try and promote their catering service. So it's like, unfortunately, if you look under the hood, how much of it, especially from big players, are doing it. So it's like, if you don't do it, you're just going to be taken advantage of.
Right. Where are we headed right now with marketing and advertising? You know, what's in store for us for social in the next 5 to 10?
I mean, AI, I'm sure you see it everywhere. Everyone's talking about AI. I mean, ChatGPT really led that whole movement. I mean, I think AI is great, but again, it's a tool that if someone doesn't know how to use it properly, it's going to end up hurting people. Like, if you write, for instance, blog posts using it and it's duplicated content, then it's going to hurt people's SEO. Or if every website has the same content on it, people are going to start to catch on. Or if people are writing social posts with it and it doesn't sound authentic, like, you can ask certain questions or say in a certain way, write me a very specific post or give me ideas to write this post. Or you go and write it through AI and then you edit it as a human. So I definitely think AI is going to continue to grow, especially with this new trend this year, but it's just using it in the right way. So AI is definitely going to grow a lot. The other thing is, as we've been talking about through this whole podcast, is video is going to continue to grow. So whether it's through Instagram Reels or YouTube Shorts or any of that stuff, video is really going to continue to grow. So people need to feel really comfortable with it. And again, things don't have to be perfect, but you just need to be doing it to some level and some degree. So that way, if you want a cold person to like trust you, they're really going to watch that video. Like, for example, on my website, I have these video testimonials that I was getting, and like, my publicist was the one who really pushed me to do them. And I'm like, I'm so glad I did them, because on so many calls that I have with prospects, they're like, man, I watched your video testimonials and they were so powerful. Like, they really got me. And they're like, I'm really feel like they were genuine and real and I got to know you. And it's like, to be able to do that while like maybe I was sleeping or doing other things, and like to be able to build that trust with someone without having to like call them up or cold email them or things like that. I'm like, that's amazing. Like, that's really fascinating to be able to do that.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's where we're headed. And you got to be careful with that, you know, with the machines writing your blog. Drew, please tell everybody how they can find out more about you.
Yeah. So you could go to my website, digitaldrewsem.com. You can also find me on Instagram at digitaldrewsem. And I mean, I am on TikTok too. And I am the real Digital Drew, not the fake one, the real one. So
awesome. Hey, great job. Thank you so much. That was, got a lot of good little nuggets here I'm going to put into action. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you for having me, Michael.
That was marketing guru Drew Blumenthal. And I got a nice little quote for him too. I love this quote too. This is the guy that made the Japanese process famous. Just because you can measure everything doesn't mean that you should. W. Edward Deming. Thank you for joining us. And I look forward to hanging out with you all on the next episode. All right. Have you guys been to longshotleaders.com? That's where you can check out all of the guests and the bios and the backgrounds and more. Also, if you haven't done so already, subscribe to the podcast on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what we do, give us a good rating. Tell your family and friends to come by and listen. It's going to make you feel nice and toasty inside. Every week, we'll be delivering knowledge, creativity, inspiration, exasperation, perspiration. If it ends with a shun, basically, you're going to find it here. All right. Thank you for joining us. And in the great words of Bill Murray in the movie Caddyshack, friends for life, I say.